I'm Jeff Eichler.
And I'm Kirsten Rickert, and we are the hosts of the Getting Unstuck podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network.
Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
The principle is be, do, have. So you become it first, then you do the actions, and then you get the results. And when you change your being and you do the exact same things you were doing yesterday, all of a sudden they start working.
Welcome to the Leader of Learning podcast. This is where educators can come to find inspiration to transform education through effective leadership. I'm your host, Dr. Dan Krynas, and my research and leadership experiences have led me to understand that someone like you, regardless of your role or your title, can truly make an impact in your organization. I chat with amazing guests who epitomize what it truly means to be a leader of learning. I'm so glad you've tuned in. Let's get started. Hey, Leader of Learning, and welcome into episode 109. This episode is going to be a little bit different from the usual. My guest in this episode is not a typical educator. Dre Baldwin is actually a former professional basketball player who has an amazingly unique story and one that describes how he overcame a lot of adversity, especially when people told him that he couldn't do what he set out to do. Dre was cut from his high school basketball team three times, finally made the team just to ride the bench in his senior year, but went on not only to play in college, but also professionally. If you know me and you know my passion for growth mindset, you will really enjoy this episode and understand why I was really excited to talk to Dre. In this episode, we talk about a growth mindset and having a mentality to dominate. I know you're going to love this episode, and I hope you stay tuned all the way to the end because we're doing a giveaway. Dre has a book that he just released recently, and I'm giving away copies of it. I want you to get your hands on a copy, so please listen all the way till the end to find out how you can win. Again, I know you're going to enjoy this episode quite a bit. So coming up is my interview with Dre Baldwin. I'm excited to bring on as my guest in this episode, Dre Baldwin, who reached out to me with a very unique story. And I just told Dre even before hitting record that I love bringing on non-educators who can really speak to aspects of education and certainly leadership from sort of an outsider's perspective. And so I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Dre, welcome to the show. I'm happy to have you. So if you could just explain to everybody who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Well, thank you, Dan. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me. So where I am, I'm in Miami, Florida, originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You know, my background's in sports. Played basketball overseas 9 years after I walked on at an NCAA Division III school. For those who don't know sports, that's not a level that those D3 does not supply to professional athletes. So most D3 athletes aren't even thinking about making it pro, let alone doing it. But I was able to make that happen. And at the same time, I started publishing content to this brand new platform called YouTube. And that's actually where a lot of people came to know me. So we're talking 2005 here. So a lot of people came to know me through YouTube, even though the goal was actually to play professional basketball. So it's funny how that worked out, that people know me from not even the main thing I was going after. But in doing so, players who were watching me on YouTube just started asking me questions about the mental approach to the game, because once they found out about my story and about my background, they were like, well, how did you have the mentality to keep working on your game despite the fact you weren't getting results? Or how do you have the confidence to really show yourself when it matters? Like at basketball tryouts for the high school team, it was a big deal for a lot of young players. Or Dre, since you had these, you know, this undecorated background, how did you even have the idea to even keep trying to make it in basketball, despite the fact that you did not have a ton of success? Why did you even keep trying? Why didn't you quit? Which is what most people do when their background doesn't look like they're going to become one of the elite. How did you even keep trying? Or people would ask me how I got started getting known online, because now it has some buzz. And this is the early days of, you know, influencer marketing and content marketing and social media. It was before we were even using those phrases then. So when people saw that I had a little name to myself on the internet, they really wanted to know about that. And again, funny, because the main goal was to play professional basketball, but people came to know me for all these other things that weren't even the focus. So I just started talking about these things, started talking about discipline, showing up all the time, confidence, believing in yourself and putting your work out there, mental toughness, continuing to try and putting yourself out there, even though the success hasn't occurred, and just initiative, going in, making things happen. Like you said, I reached out to you in order for this interview to happen. And when I started talking about those things, people really, really started connecting to it. So, of course, the basketball players were, you know, connecting with me because they saw I knew how to play basketball and I could explain it. But people who weren't even basketball players, and the players also, they really liked it when I started talking about the mental side of things. And there were three reasons why that mattered a lot. Number one, because there are a lot of basketball players out there. You know, I'm not the only player in the world. I'm not the best in the world. I'm close, but I wasn't the best in the world. So I needed, that was the thing that kind of separated me from everybody else who could do a dribbling drill or who can dunk, was that I could talk about the mental side of the game way better than they could. Number two, as an athlete, you understand that your careers are short. You know, I actually just talked about this to my audience not too long ago. The average athletic career is somewhere between 3 and 6 years. Even baseball and a sport that, you know, there's no physical contact, your career does not last that long. So eventually you need something else you offer to the world. And the third thing was people who weren't even athletes started finding my material when I started talking about the mindset side of the game. This whole philosophy that I now call work on your game. When I started talking about that, people who didn't play sports were like, yo, Dre, I'm not trying to learn how to dunk, but when you talk about that mental game stuff, man, that stuff applies to anybody. Anybody can learn from that. And I follow you. I don't watch any of the basketball drills, but I listen when you talk about the mindset stuff because that stuff applies to everybody. So that planted a seed in my mind. Okay, one day this ball is going to stop bouncing. Who am I at that point? Now, what do I offer to the world at that point? So that planted the seed in my head early. This is in the middle of my career. So then when I stopped playing about 5-6 years ago, I already knew exactly what I was going into because I was already doing it. So I had a leg up on most athletes. When they finished, they had to start at zero. I wasn't at zero. I was able to hit the ground running. So that's where I'm at today, CEO of my company, Work On Your Game Incorporated.
That's fantastic. It's definitely a unique story. And, you know, in full transparency, when Dre reached out, he did something that I've not seen a lot of people do, which was actually to send me a personalized video. And I sort of fell in love, so to speak, with your story from there. And I really do think that your story and what you practice and preach with, not only in your career as a pro basketball player, but also with the work that you do now with your company, definitely speaks to or could speak to both educators and students in terms of what's happening in education. I guess I wanted to just go back to something that you said first, though. You just mentioned how, you know, you basically were cut from and then rode the bench on your high school team, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong. But then turned it into a pretty successful, I mean, you said that pro basketball careers or professional athlete careers in general are pretty short, but you were able to make it work for 9 years. You also mentioned, though, that it wasn't until about halfway through your professional career that sort of this mind shift in your own mind kind of happened. And so I guess I was just wondering if you could take us back a little bit more specifically to why and when that happened for you.
And the thing is, then that was always within me. It's just I hadn't had a reason to articulate it or share it with anybody else. So when I was getting cut from my high school team, as you mentioned, 3 years in a row, most athletes, most players, young men, I gotta say, they're not even players, they're not on the team. They get cut the first 2 years, they don't try out anymore. Or maybe the first year, and they're like, well, forget it. I'm not going to keep trying for the basketball team. Obviously, basketball is not for me. So I had to have discipline and mental toughness, even at that point, to keep trying. And even confidence, believing in myself that if I kept trying, eventually something would work out, even though most of the people around me, my peers, would say, well, you tried out 3 times, you didn't make it. What's the point of even trying out the 4th time? And even then, when I made it, I sat the bench the 1 year I was on the team. So any reasonable person would have looked at that and said, all right, you're 18, you're, you know, in this transition period from child to man. All right, let's get serious now. Let's let the pipe dream go. Basketball is not it. Let's do something else. I needed all those mental game elements to even keep trying at that point. So, and it wasn't until that period around 2005 to 2009-ish that players started asking me explicit questions about my mindset. And that's when the stuff just started pouring out of me because I'm like, well, to me, Dan, it's kind of like, and I think a lot of educators can relate to this, when you stuff is inherent to you, when it's just a normal way of you looking at the world and thinking, you just assume everybody else already gets it. So you don't even consider it a big deal to talk about it. But when I started talking about it, people responded to it in ways like they had never heard anything like that before. It had never occurred to them. And I said, okay, so there's a whole audience of people who never even thought these thoughts. So let me start, you know, putting these quote unquote on paper. And that was, first of all, through video, then eventually became, you know, books, courses, and things like that. And to answer the rest of your question, even during my professional basketball career, it wasn't like this was some yellow brick road once I started my career and then everything went perfect. From that point, there was a period where I found myself unemployed in the pro world. I didn't have a basketball job. And again, people who don't know the pro sports world, there are a lot of athletes who at times are on the fringes of the game, meaning the season is going on. But right now, the NBA season is going on. But there are pro basketball players who are out of a job right now, and they're just waiting for a phone call from their agent or an opportunity from a team so they can go play. But they got to play the waiting game. They just have to wait and stay ready for the opportunity to come. So I found myself in that position around 2008, 2009. And that's when I really just thought about my life. And I'm getting into my late mid to late 20s at this point, and I'm just projecting out, all right, what is my life going to look like if I keep living this way? And the challenge for me was I didn't have any control over my destiny. I didn't know when I was going to have a job. And anybody who's worked before knows you don't have a job, you don't have any money. So I'm like, all right, how am I going to control my destiny and live the way that I want to live if my destiny is always controlled by whether or not someone else feels that I am qualified for a job? Because even in the pro sports world, a lot of people outside of that world don't think about it, but someone has to choose you for you to get that job. You have to be chosen. And there's a limited number of spots. It's not like the internet where anybody can get on. And at the same time, I'm on the internet. And I see this growing audience that I have. It wasn't, you know, there was not a lot of money to be made at that point. This is around, again, 2008. And that's when I asked myself a great question. I said, how can I combine three things? What I love doing, basketball, what I'm good at, being on the internet, and making money, which is what everybody needs to make money, even if you're not a money-driven person. And when I asked that question, the answer, that insight was building out my website, you know, building what became my personal brand. And this is, again, early stages of us even using this kind of phrases. People weren't even saying these things at that time. And then creating my own products and services. And then when I started selling those things, I said to myself, well, look, I love basketball and I'm still of age to play, so I'll keep playing. But this thing on the internet, when I started creating and selling my own stuff, I said, I could do this for the rest of my life. And that's really what got me focused on it. So I was, for the last half of my basketball career, I was doing both at the same time.
You know, when we talk about how your work and this conversation can relate to education, I think of a few different things. What I'm picking up off of what you're saying is, first and foremost, how educators who directly work with and can therefore impact students should encourage them no matter what. You know what I mean? Like, if a student has a passion, has an interest in something, even if they're not the most talented in the world, that's still reason enough to support them through what they want to do. As you're talking, I'm thinking about even my own 10-year-old son, who is an athlete. He's a pretty good baseball and hockey player. May or may not want to become a professional athlete someday. I don't know. Most 10-year-olds probably do. But he's becoming more and more interested in video games. And clearly, the generation that I'm in, and certainly generations that have come before, have not necessarily had that as a quote unquote real job, you know. I'm careful not to discourage him and dissuade him, because that's something he's really passionate about. So, you know, whether or not it becomes a career for him, it doesn't matter. I want to support him through it. I'm also thinking about, like, what you're talking about with content creation. And for both students and the educators themselves, you know, you mentioned, like, personal branding wasn't really a thing that people were talking about 10 years ago, 15 years ago. We've talked about it on this show before, how educators themselves should get their voice out there. You know, yes, new podcasts and things are popping up all the time, blogs, YouTube channels. But I know I learned so much from other people in the space because of the way that they share things. So I appreciate that as well. Let's talk about that for a minute. You know, what do you do then, I guess, when like you said, you made that shift where, yes, you were still playing, but you kind of saw or sensed that people were reaching out or interested more and more in what you had to say about the mental part of the game. So what were some steps that you took to make sure that you got your content out there?
Well, I just kept publishing. That was, that's the short answer is at this time, this is the early days of YouTube. YouTube started in 2005. That's when I first put my videos out there. But once I saw that people were responding to it, I just kept publishing. So by 2009, between 2009 and 2011, I was putting out videos, usually even more than one video a day. I remember in summer of 2011, I was putting out four videos a day because that's how much the audience was eating it up. And that's how much content I was putting out there. So the stuff just started pouring out of me. And some of this was training stuff and some of it was mindset material. So at that point, when I saw that that was not, there was an opportunity there, I started creating programs and products that this was all specifically targeted towards a basketball player who was trying to get better at playing basketball and making the videos. And they were basically, the videos were sending people to my website and then they were buying the product. So that's how it was working. You know, no advertising or anything like that. And then around 2010, that's when I wrote my first book, Buy a Game. And that was me just telling my basketball story, how I got started and how I got into the game and things like that. And then over the next couple of years, players would just, I would just notice the kind of questions they were asking me. And I thought, well, I wrote my first book and I now self-publishing is becoming ubiquitous. It was easy to go on Amazon, KDP, and you can, you know, upload and basically have a book right there. You can get it printed out and everything. And it didn't cost you any money. You could do it literally for free. If you want to design your own book and do your own editing, you could literally do it for $0, just a time investment. So I started writing more books and I started, of course, writing about mindset. The same stuff I was talking about in my mindset videos on YouTube. I basically just wrote those things out and made books about them. That was basically what I did when I first got started. And my books were, early books were about discipline, confidence, mental toughness, and personal initiative. To this very day, that bundle is still the most popular bundle of books I have, and I have damn near 30 books written. So that was how I got started, and I just kept creating that content, kept putting it out. And over time, more and more people are coming to the internet, more and more people are coming to social media, and these people, of which I was one, who have an audience on the internet, who have a brand, they have this message, and people are connecting to it. We started to become your somebody because you're doing this. Now, mind you, Dan, when I first started, this was not a thing. So again, I didn't jump into the internet game because I saw it as a way to, you know, make money or get famous. I just did it because I saw there was an underserved audience that I could serve. So then it evolved into, okay, now this can be a business. And again, while I'm still playing ball, I'm noticing this and I'm saying, okay, perfect. So as soon as I get done playing, I know what I can do. I don't have to keep playing just because I need to make another dollar. I can play as long as I want to play, and then I can move on and do this business thing because I see there's an opportunity there. So the next thing I did was just, I just put my foot on the gas and did more of what I already knew. And I thought I was, you know, a business person back then. It turns out I didn't know as much as I thought I did, but you know, it was working up to that point. So I just kept doing it.
You know, when you're speaking, I kind of just naturally keep going back to the word hustle. So much of what I just heard you say was you just kept putting out content. You kept hustling, so to speak, that you put it out there and hope that people would enjoy it. And you built an audience. You built a community of people who basically were eating up your stuff. And so, you know, I think one of the big takeaways that I'm hoping that my listeners get from this episode too, again, is that we as educators or leaders in general, regardless of what field you're in, have a voice. And like you said before, back in the day, people were just learning YouTube and learning how to create that content. But now, fast forward to 2021, I mean, it's super easy to create a podcast, have a YouTube channel. You know, like you said, even self-publishing, publishing a book is not that difficult. It might be a little more costly than it was back when you started, but still many ways to share your voice and share that content. And one of the first things you said about it was like, I just published it, right? I have a friend, another podcaster who says, just hit record. Like literally the first step you need to do is just to do it. And so I appreciate that sentiment. Now, you mentioned this as you were talking, and I want to go back to it so you can kind of expand on it and get more specific. And before I ask you to, I want to mention that since you and I are meeting for the first time here, I don't know if you know this about me, but last year I earned my doctorate degree. And the way that I did that was doing my own research. Thanks. Doing my own research basically on how leaders in education, school leaders, can affect change in others. And I honed in very specifically on two theories. One was a leadership theory called transformational leadership, and the other was growth mindset. So clearly, I'm very interested in what you have to say here about mindset and how to really motivate people to want to change either themselves or others. Like, you're helping change others in terms of motivating them, whether they're athletes or not. And we as educators, that's our hope to do with students. So in your work with Work on Your Game, I know you have those four tenets, and you mentioned them briefly a minute ago, I think, but what are those four tenets that you have to therefore kind of inspire and motivate that growth in others?
Sure. So I'll explain each one of them. So the first one is discipline, which is showing up every single day to do the work. Second is confidence, putting yourself out there boldly and authentically. Third is mental toughness, is continuing to show up every day, doing the work, putting yourself out there, even when the success that you've expected to achieve has yet to be achieved. And the fourth is personal initiative, making things happen instead of waiting for things to happen. So for looking back at my own life, whether that was in the sports world or even outside of the sports world, I needed those elements in order to create my success. And looking at anyone else's life, anything that any of us do, including yourself, Dan, and any one of the listeners, you need these. Discipline with your show right now. You had to be consistent in putting your episodes out so people know what they're going to get, and your process and how you actually do your recording. Then there's confidence, believing in your message enough that you're willing to have the ego to say, hey, I have a show and I'm going to be the host and I'm going to put this out here and you're going to listen to it and get value from it. That takes a little bit of ego for any of us to put our own work out there to the internet and tell the world that they need to pay attention to us. And that requires a certain level of confidence to put your work out there in a confident way, because a lot of communication, we all know, is nonverbal. It's not the words you say, but it's how you say them and the energy around what you say. That's really what people buy into or they don't buy into. And that confidence, I'm talking about the real inner confidence, that is what determines how people read that. Mental toughness, I think, is probably the biggest one. If I had to take all of these and I can only pick one element, I would just say mental toughness and put everything else underneath it. Because mental toughness, nobody's life is perfect. We're all human beings. We are all imperfect creatures. We make mistakes. Things don't work the way we want them to work. We make these perfect plans that do not work out. We plan things with and around other people and they do something completely different than what we thought they were going to do. And sometimes things just don't work. Even if we think we did everything right, things just don't work. Mental toughness is the measure of, are you going to show up the next day as if the previous day didn't happen, or without holding the baggage of the previous day? It's not that we ignore it, but are you going to hold that baggage? This is especially important in the sports world, because in sports, you're going to lose a game. You're going to miss a shot. You're going to come up against an opponent who is better than you. Are you going to show up the next day still carrying the weight of yesterday's game, or are you going to show up as if that didn't even occur, or you already put that on the back burner? And at the same time with success also, and this is something that rarely gets talked about with mental toughness, just because you've succeeded in the last game, you had 35 points and your team won, now that's not doing anything for today's game. So are you showing up at today's game as if what you did yesterday is going to make up for what you need to do today? You still had to have the toughness to push yourself again. And this is why it's so hard for many people to repeat and duplicate their success in life, because once they get the first success, they don't have the same drive to do it again. So that's a part of mental toughness as well. In the business world also, and in the education world, you're going to have tough days. I'm sure as anyone who's a teacher, I'm sure you've dealt with some tough students and some tough parents and tough colleagues and tough administrators that you had to deal with, and maybe a school that you didn't want to be working at. And you still have to show up every day as a professional, because the job of a professional is to show up every time and deliver regardless of how they are feeling. And amateurs don't do that. Amateurs show up when they feel like it and when everything's working, but a professional has to show up all the time. And then the last one, personal initiative. Now, all this mental stuff is great, right? But if you just have that and you just sit on your couch with it, you could be motivated, but you're not doing anything. So the personal initiative is what actually turns that potential energy into kinetic energy, meaning it is energy in motion. You are actually doing something and getting started, because Dan, I'm sure you have plenty of people when they find out you have a podcast who say to you, I wish I had a podcast. I want to start a podcast. I want to do the things that you said you got a doctorate. How many people tell you they want to get one, right? But they haven't done it. They haven't even applied, but they want one, right? They haven't even taken the first step. So personal initiative is taking some action. And like you said, your friend told you, just hit record. Hitting the record button is the initiative. There are so many people who want to do this thing, that thing, and the third, and they see people like myself and yourself doing it. So it's not like they don't have the information. They just don't do it. So that's where the initiative takes all of this mental stuff and actually puts it into action.
I love all that, but I do want to go back to one thing specifically that you said, and it relates to the confidence piece. I actually have my own chapter in a book coming out, hopefully over the next couple of months. And it's an education book, but it talks about how teachers need to stop comparing themselves to others. And the spin that I put on it is to talk about imposter syndrome, right? How, and we've said this before already in this episode, like, just get your voice out there, just do it. People will want to listen to what you have to say. Even if you think that it's something that someone else has already said, you're going to do it in your own unique, special kind of way. And then the next thing you followed up with after confidence was mental toughness. But I guess my question is, like, what if someone isn't super confident, or they're not sure whether they have that toughness to get to break through the confidence piece? Are there things that you've done or that you've spoken about that may help with that confidence piece, whether it's for educators or for students? I just really like to get your opinion there.
Sure. The framework that I use to explain confidence, or at least the first framework that I use, is what I call the super you. And a super you is you still being yourself, but is you at your highest possible level of confidence and then taking it even a level higher. So often people look at confidence and they may have a lot of people know about the idea of fake it till you make it. Now, I personally don't even believe in fake it till you make it. I believe it's a misnomer. I did a TED talk talking about this specifically, because fake it till you make it presupposes that you're pretending to be somebody that you're not. And that does not work. So an example that I use is, there was this basketball player in high school. He was a marginal player, maybe the 10th best player on a team of 12 guys. So he was not a star by any measure. On his best day, he was mediocre. But one day in practice, the coach says, all right, today we're going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to assign each one of you young men to pretend to be one of your teammates. So I'm going to randomly assign each one of you to be somebody else. So all day in practice today, whoever you're assigned to be, however they normally play, you play like them. So in other words, the coach was basically letting the players coach themselves that day to show each other who they were. So instead of the coach saying, I'm not going to chastise you and tell you how you're messing up, your own teammate's going to show you what you do. So you know I'm not hating on you or just bashing you for no reason. So this one guy, he's a marginal player. His assignment that day, randomly, is to be his teammate Mike. Now, who is Mike? Mike just happens to be the best player on the team. So this guy who's the mediocre guy on his best day, his assignment, according to his coach, is to pretend to be the best player on the team that day. So let me ask you, Dan, I always ask my audiences this, how do you think that guy played in practice on this particular day?
I'm guessing he stepped up his game.
Yeah, he dominated. He said, I played basketball better that day than I'd ever played in my life, even into his adulthood. Never played that well again. He said, I'm doing all kinds of moves I never did before. I'm making shots I never make, making shots I never even try. And my teammates, his teammates were looking at him like, where is this coming from? Where'd you get all this skill? And at the end of practice, the coach said to the guy, listen, if that's what it takes, you need to pretend to be Mike every day for the rest of your life. And what he had done is stepped into this concept that I'm talking about called the super you. Now, he wasn't faking it until he made it, because you can't fake the ball going in the basket in a basketball game. Right, that's not fake. That actually happened. You can't fake doing the moves. So when people call themselves faking it till they make it, the problem with that is your mind, your subconscious mind, knows that you're faking, because you told yourself, I'm pretending to be somebody else. And it's almost like the story of Cinderella. Everybody knows what happens when the clock strikes 12. Right, you go back from that beautiful ball gown back to the rags. All right, and that's what happens to people when they fake it till they make it. Eventually, the clock runs out. All the sand runs out of that hourglass. But when you decide to become it, instead of faking it, you become it. You step into the mentality and the approach and the energy and the posture. I'm not talking just the physical posture, but the internal posture of the person that you actually want to be. And then from there, the actions come next. What a lot of people get mixed up in life, Dan, is that they start with all right, what are the things I need to do? And then once I start doing them, then I'll feel however I need to feel. That is backwards. And this is why many people work really hard, but they don't achieve their outcomes, is because they think they had to do first, then they'll have the energy. No, you have the energy first. That's the being. That's the principle, is be, do, have. So you become it first, then you do the actions, and then you get the results. And when you change your being and you do the exact same things you were doing yesterday, all of a sudden they start working. So that's the biggest key when it comes to confidence.
Again, I love so much of what you said, and I definitely don't want to take anything away from that aspect that I think is super valuable of being the super you, the version of you that's like extra. But what I actually took out also is the fact that as an instructional coach, so someone in my full-time, you know, day-to-day work, as someone who supports teachers and hopefully gets them to be the best teacher they can be, I really love what you said about having teacher, or in this case, having players pretend to be or learn from other players. And I say that to teachers all the time. One of the best ways for me to learn, and the one of the most impactful ways that I've grown as an educator, is by watching how other people are doing things. And so I just kind of want to use that as an opportunity to tell my listeners that if you are in education, if you're a classroom teacher especially, but even if you're an administrator, and you can set up some kind of system where teachers can visit other teachers and learn from one another, then they can sort of be that super you version of themselves, where they aspire to work like someone that they think in real life or even fictitiously is that epitome of what a really great teacher should be. So I appreciate that message very much. Of course, as we wrap up here, I would like you to plug your stuff. I'll mention first that Dre's YouTube channel is amazing. I think at this point, over 135 or 136,000 subscribers, clearly some really inspirational and motivational content that you've been putting out there for a long time now. And I appreciate that content very much. Where else can my listeners find you, your work, your message, your publications, everything?
Well, I'm on every platform. Only thing I'm not on is TikTok. So if you're looking for me on TikTok, you won't find me unless somebody else uploaded something of mine. But I'm on every other platform actively. I do have a lot of books. I do have a book people can get for free if they would just help us out by covering the shipping. Can I share that, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. This is my book called The Mirror of Motivation, The Self-Guide to Self-Discipline. First principle of the Work When You Gain philosophy is discipline. This is the book that everyone should start with. And let me tell you why you want to get this book. Even though I'm giving it to you for free, I'm just asking you to cover the shipping. I still got to tell you why to get it. It's because, as I just explained, a lot of people in life go through their lives, you know, doing, because they're trying to achieve that outcome, which seems to make sense. You can't get something for nothing, right? But since people never ask themselves the question, who do I need to be? They do all this work, but it doesn't quite produce a result. And then they start thinking that something's wrong with them or something's wrong with their strategy. Nothing's wrong with you. Nothing's wrong with your strategy. You just need to ask yourself a different set of questions. This book, The Mirror of Motivation, will provide you the frameworks to ask the question, who do I need to be? And for you to answer the question. So this book is not me hyping you up. This is not Dre telling you who to be as a person. That wouldn't make any sense. This is me providing a framework for you to ask yourself. That's why it's called The Mirror of Motivation. So you can get this book for free by going to mirrorofmotivation.com. That's mirrorofmotivation.com. All we ask is that you help us cover the shipping and handling charge. We have already paid for this book. We'll ship it to you wherever you are. Again, that's mirrorofmotivation.com.
That's awesome. Let me ask you a question. How much is the shipping to cover the shipping?
In the U.S., $9.95. If it's outside of U.S., we offer a bonus bundle for $27. That's the physical, digital, audio, 4 additional masterclasses, and worldwide rush shipping.
That's good to know. Here's what I want to do. I'm going to pay the shipping for not just one, not two, but 3 of my listeners. All right. So here's what I want. If you made it all the way through this episode and you've gotten to this point, listeners, what I want you to do is this. On Twitter, or actually let's go any social media, because Dre said he's everywhere except for TikTok. On any social media platform, please tag Dre and me at Dr_Krynas or at Leader of Learning, depending on the platform. Talk about why you want the book, and I will pay for the shipping, so you will get that book free. 3 of my listeners will get that book that Dre just mentioned, and it can be yours, all right, for nothing. Dre, thank you so much for coming on. Of course, I will put links to all of your social media platforms and your publications in the show notes. This has been great. You know, as I said at the beginning, I really do appreciate, and it's been a while, but I appreciate opportunities to speak to people outside of education who can impact education and speak to leadership and things that that I love talking about. And I know that my listeners get a lot of value out of as well. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you for all the work that you have been doing in terms of work on your game and helping inspire people to work on their game and produce content and everything. So I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate the opportunity, Dan. Thank you for having me on. Thanks for making that offer to your listeners as well.
Well, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you enjoy the content shared on the show, please recommend this podcast to other educators, leaders, friends, or anyone you think would love listening and learning. I would also appreciate it if you would leave a positive rating and review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or whatever podcast app you use to listen. For more information about me or this show, head over to leaderoflearning.com. While you're there, you can also find the Leader of Learning blog, how to connect on social media such as Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Voxer, sign up for our newsletter, and even find out how to purchase Leader of Learning merchandise. Thanks again, and remember, no matter who you are or where you are, you too can be a leader of learning.